Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing for the singing of our national anthem.
Said Britain is just a small island that no one pays attention to.
A former colony won the right to determine its own destiny.
Hello and welcome to Mid-Atlantic, the show where we look at the news and the views from one side of the Atlantic from the perspective of the other. I'm Royfield Brown in Birmingham, who's blacker than coffee right now because of the sweltering British summer. Today we are joined by that most gentle of journalists, that sensitive soul in Norwich, Mick Wright, and we call onto the field of battle our super sub, Pundit Doug Levy in San Francisco. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Bloody hell, Nick. In a week that has seen England lose yet another semi-final, we ask, why is Donald Trump over here upsetting all of us good Brits?
Donald Trump's due in the UK today for the first time as US president. Meantime, the US embassy in Britain is currently worried about the safety of Americans during the visit. In fact, it's issued an alert warning people to be cautious as large anti-Trump protests are expected to be held in London.
The day has come. Donald Trump's first official visit to the UK starts this Thursday. He'll be wining and dining with Theresa May and her ministers, visiting Scotland and meeting the Queen. One place he'll be avoiding for the next couple of days, though, is central London, as thousands are expected onto the streets to protest his visit. The number of police being mobilized is in the thousands too, reportedly the largest number since the 2011 riots. And activists have crowdfunded cash for a gigantic baby balloon in Trump's likeness to amplify the message that the US president is not welcome here.
I don't want him here. He's not welcome.
I don't have any time or respect for him.
Donald Trump has arrived in the UK for a four-day visit, which will feature talks with our embattled PM, Theresa May, crumpets with the Queen, and a giant Trump baby blimp flown over Westminster. How will we judge if the many protests to mark his visit have had an impact? Mick, over to you.
Well, as usual, I'm going to sort of reject the premise of the question, which I know you love. There was a lot of this on television today, you know, with Piers Morgan howling on that there weren't protests like this when Obama came, you could argue we should have protested Obama's, you know, foreign policy and the drone strike policy and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, there's so many people saying, what's the point of this? It won't may have any effect. But that's not really what... I think that's like people failing to make a distinction between a protest and a strike or, you know, other action where you have a lot of people together. Like in a strike, you're trying to achieve a specific action. You want to put pressure on an employer or a government to change something. With a protest, the protest itself is... You know, it's an act. It's a form of speech. So the notion that anyone is protesting because they think it'll stop, like make some kind of change in the immediate term, is just kind of idiotic. It's protest can lead to change. It can also just simply have a cathartic effect for people. And also it's necessary, I think, because people believe things and want to demonstrate those beliefs by going onto the streets to do that. And, you know, the example, I think, in the UK that we always come back to of, oh, protest doesn't change anything, is the anti-war march before the Iraq war. But the thing to say about that is that protest does have an effect because, you know, 13 years later, we're still talking about it. It was a cultural moment. It's a stick to beat those people who went to war without the votes, without the UN authorization. It's a stick to beat them with. So in that respect, you know, it's worth protesting. If you believe in something, it's worth protesting, getting out on the streets, because it shows that people actually give a shit about a particular situation or a particular individual's policies.
Surely the best example of protest working in the UK is the poll tax at the end of the 80s, early 90s.
But mate, that's not protest, that's riots, you know.
No, but there were mass protests, of which actually the riots were a very small part.
People were
protesting in just about every major UK city.
That's a very different kind of protest, though. It's like you're comparing grapefruits and oranges here, because this is... That's a protest about a very specific issue, right? A domestic...
Which people felt very exercised about.
I love it when you do this. I love it when you do this. Like you're halfway through a sentence and you... there's no point. Just, yeah, fine. Whatever. Yeah, no. Fine.
Nick, go. Finish what you were saying.
No, because I get halfway through and forget what I was going to say. The point with the Trump thing is, this protest is more symbolic. The poll tax protests are about a specific issue. With Trump, it's a whole load of different issues. It's like the women's marches. They were coalescing around the question of, like, you know, or the catalyst of Trump. But these protests are not focused on a specific issue. Therefore, their aim is not to get rid of Donald Trump. Their aim is merely to illustrate dissent and dissatisfaction with not just Trump, but a kind of populist attempt at reshaping the world order or whatever.
Just so we're clear, mate, I completely agree with your analysis. And I believe that protests, if nothing else, are cathartic, and that in and of itself is a very good thing. You know, it gens up political opposition and people don't feel so inert. So I think they're fundamentally a good thing, and I agree with you. So don't think that just because I was interrupting that it's because I was trying to shout you down or actually disagree. Now, Doug, you Americans are our closest allies, and we've had one or two disagreements along the way, but the special relationship is probably much more special to us than it is to you. So isn't it right that the baby man is over here at the moment?
There's nothing right about anything that man does, so why should this be different?
Oh, you're gonna have to expand on that answer, Doug. We haven't heard from you in so many months that we need to hear your voice, sir.
Well, there's a whole lot to say. Well, the thing is, the protests in the UK against Trump are not going to accomplish much, but I'm the last person to tell people to shut up. I actually think that
it's not a case of telling people to shut up, because Mick and I are in complete utter agreement, and I think you are too, that people have the right to protest. And in a way, this podcast is a very small but hopefully notable addition to the protest, because none of us like the man. However, I'm just saying, is it right and proper that the President of the United States, our closest ally on planet Earth, is afforded a visit on our hallowed
shores? Well, that's actually a really good question, and it raises two issues that have been very important to many of us on this side of the pond. One is, you know, how should other heads of state and other governments treat our president when he behaves the way he does? And My personal belief, based on everything I've seen, is that if the gentleman is not going to act like a gentleman, he should not be received like one. But that puts our allies like the UK in a very difficult position, because the man is temperamental. And if he's not given everything he asks for, he will have a temper tantrum and impose tariffs. You know, it's kind of not the model of good behavior. Personally, I think the better option would be for the other heads of state, including Theresa May, to be respectful and model good behavior, but don't necessarily roll out the red carpet. I think the fact that he's going to be steered clear of the protests is offensive, because one of the great traditions that the United States and the UK share is our love of the freedom to protest. And that is part of our DNA, or should be. And for a president to be shielded from that.
But your president doesn't understand that,
right,
though, does he? He sees any protest as a personal affront.
But this is an opportunity for even the Queen to help educate him, or at least try. And the other side of the coin, of course, is that historically, state visits to the United States have been high honors reserved for allies and others who've basically earned it. And our current president, you know, I think his first head of state visit was the dictator of the Philippines. He's invited Vladimir Putin to the White House. It's like, you know, these are things that make those of us that have covered Washington, D.C. as journalists, or really anybody who's watched these things play out over the years, it makes our heads spin. It's not the right way to be doing international relations.
Doug, the president of the Philippines, he was elected, and he's an odious man with horrible views, but can we call him a dictator?
He murders people. He doesn't seem to follow the rule of law. I kind of think that counts.
All right, you convinced me.
Duterte's a dictator. He's an authoritarian. And in fact, Duterte even said it himself. He said, if I don't act like a dictator, then the Philippines won't progress. So, you know, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and calls itself a duck, it's probably a duck.
I agree. Now, Trump has weighed in on Brexit this week, Mick, saying that the UK is heading on a different route to the one that the British people expected. So Trump sounds like a hard Brexiteer. And the UK could end up with a closer relationship with the EU than has been predicted. Do you reckon he's right, Mick? After the kerfuffle that we've had this weekend, with those resignations in the British government, is the president of the US right? We're heading for a nice, soft, cuddly Brexit.
I don't really turn to Donald Trump for my nuanced analysis on anything. No, not well. I don't know. It's a shit show. We're heading for another general election this year, probably. I don't know. I don't know how Brexit is achievable, frankly, which could be wishful thinking. The whole thing just boils my piss.
Well, and in fact, what we're seeing with Brexit, I think, is what we will be seeing in the United States if things keep going down the same path. So the challenges with Brexit, the reality that is facing the UK, is foreshadowing what we should be expecting in the United States.
So when Trump, Doug, described the UK as a country in turmoil because of Brexit, you know, was he spot on the money? Is it some kind of orange lie, or dare I say, do orange lies even matter? Was this the truth?
From our perspective, it certainly does appear to be some degree of turmoil, but I think it is in reality a bit more orderly than Mr. Trump believes, and that's of course troubling. He's got a very simplistic view of everything. He sees everything transactionally. He sees things as one-off negotiations where it's like flipping a light switch. It's either on or off. There's no in between. And that doesn't work with international relations or trade or finance, because you have shared interests. And the whole point of negotiation is to find the middle ground. The hard Brexiteers wanted a complete pull away.
Hey, but those countries that want the middle ground, aren't they the countries that systematically have pulled one over American eyes for the last 70 years since the Bretton Woods Agreement? Trump doesn't want that.
I think the whole premise that anybody's pulled wool over our eyes is faulty, because look at how our economy has grown since Bretton Woods. Look at how other economies have grown since then. Look at all of the advances in technology, medicine, science.
Yeah, but that's because those sneaky Germans haven't been paying enough money to defend themselves.
So, but that's false. Germany pays 2.2% of their GDP toward defense. And, you know, we fought the war and won. So it's been this partnership of rebuilding Germany that has helped the global economy succeed. And that's something that seems to be invisible to our current administration.
Mick, tell you one thing which I've really been surprised by. There's a Guardian ICM poll just released just yesterday. It showed that 53% of respondents, only 53% of respondents, disagreed with the idea that Trump was doing a good job. I seriously thought he was more disliked than that. Are you surprised by those figures too?
I consider all political polling in the UK to be utterly broken due to their failure to predict the last two elections or the Brexit vote. So I don't think it's a very clean assessment of how disliked he is. And the polling numbers, you know, the numbers used for that, the sample size for that is not significant, really. I think people think he's a joke. I don't think even our wacko conservatives on this side of the pond think he's good. You know, even the worst of our rapacious, thieving, lying capitalist scum think he's great. No, I don't know. I think a better poll will probably have a much higher percentage than that. I think as well, we are just distracted by Brexit, and we're distracted by the World Cup. And I don't know, it's a great time to be talking about Trump. I think it's almost like whenever we discuss this, what's going to go on this show, you're always saying, oh, is there any way we can not talk about Trump or Brexit? Because there's fatigue with it as well.
Hmm. True that, brother. Just to end up with this, I'm going to have the last words going to go over to you, Doug. Now, earlier on this week, Trump praised our former Foreign Secretary, Boris Johnson. Now, he resigned on Monday. Now, here's a question from all good Brits. Can Trump please take Boris Johnson with him when he leaves on Air Force One?
I'm sure he would like to. I mean, we've already seen.
Don't laugh. It's a serious question.
We have certainly seen that Trump is more willing to take advice on how to do his job from foreign people like Vladimir Putin. You know, Trump apparently gets advice on media relations and governance from Vladimir Putin. So why not Boris Johnson? Why not name him to a U.S. post? I don't see what would stop him. Even if our Constitution forbids it, we've got a Republican Congress that is unwilling to lift a finger to protect the Constitution. So why not?
And on that note, let's move to something which has got little to do with Brexit or even Donald Trump. It's international sport.
Serge has scored more goals for his country than Mario Mandzukic is there. And they will return home as national treasures.
I thought we could do it, but one of those certain times, but it was like that.
We've lost in the semi-final, but in terms of the journey from kind of England having no hope, Evans having some hope, and then going on to be, actually believe that we could do something in the World Cup. You've got to give Gareth, all the boys, everyone, and hope to get behind the team like we have done. It's got to be a win for everybody.
It was a good game. Nice, good game. England was in control the first half. I thought England was definitely going to win, but as it happened, Kroos took over the second half.
Pretty gutted, actually.
First half, brilliant. Second half, disappointing.
The US mainly plays sport that the rest of the world finds baffling, or just plain odd. Do you think that the US in its sporting isolation means that you lot, you Yanks, miss out on moments of national joy or despair, like a World Cup victory or defeat?
Well, we've certainly lost our sense of sport, and that's a sad thing. I grew up as an avid baseball fan, and around 2004, was completely repulsed by how business had overtaken everything. So there was no loyalty to geography. There was no loyalty to the fans. It was just a question of who was going to get rich. And it sure wasn't those of us that were paying for the tickets to watch the games. And that's a really sad thing. As a result, we don't have a national passion that unifies us. We have national passions that divide us.
Is that really true, Doug? Just for what it's worth, right? FIFA is an incredibly corrupt organization, and they are the governing body behind world football, okay? And they're corrupt, venal, and a thoroughly bad lot.
Other than that, they're great people.
But still, you can have an occasion like the World Cup, which every country on planet Earth plays football to a varying or lesser degree, and you can still have those sponsor logos. So there's big business behind FIFA and the World Cup, but still it feels like you can be jingoistic in this one field of human kind of interaction without it being nasty. And I just think that you guys just kind of miss out on that.
We do. There's no question about that.
But hang on, though. The thing about that is, though, look at the size of the US, right? If you look at basketball or American football or baseball, like we always make this annoying crack about the World Series is not the world because it's only America, right? And occasionally Canadians, I guess. But the point is, because of the size of America, a Texan's a Texan, right? So they do get to experience that quite regularly, both in the run up like state championships, like college basketball, the NFL. Like they have these because there's so many people, and you've got so many teams, and there's so much money in it. That it is that these defeats and disappointments and whatever, they are almost on the size of a national thing. When you look at the size of, California or whatever, it's like there are millions of people watching those games.
But there are very few often, instances where you have large numbers of people all together rooting the same way. It happens a little bit.
You've got like I guess March Madness and the Super Bowl.
Well, yes and no. So March Madness definitely interrupts pretty much everything. So that's the college basketball tournament. A lot of businesses ought to just shut down for those couple of weeks every spring because people watch the games, and some of them are very, very good. But you don't have unification around cheering on. The collective
America
teams, or an American team, you've got people picking sides and wanting their team to win and the other teams to lose, and that's a big difference. And on the Super Bowl, I think the NFL has done a good job of pushing a lot of people away because they've probably realized they'll make more money if they just appeal to the same 30, 40%, whatever that they reach now, much like Trump does. And folks like me have zero interest in football. I used to occasionally watch it, but now I see the Super Bowl day as the best day to go skiing because nobody's on the slopes.
I was really struck by, there's a couple of things to weigh into this, that traveling the length and breadth of England in the last week. So I've been in Brighton, I've been in London, I've been in Birmingham, and you're seeing the flag of St. George. And after England progressed from game to game, strangers in the street would literally walk up to you, and yes, they've stumbled out of a bar, and just start singing "England's Coming Home." And it does feel, however fleeting, like a different place, and like we were all together. And I think, though people are jokingly saying that Gareth Southgate, the England manager, should become prime minister because the England football team have been a unifying force, it's only actually half a joke. And it's that which I always think is really missing from American sport. And I was really struck by watching an ESPN documentary some months ago talking about the Miracle on Ice, which is the Winter Olympics in 1980, where the US defeated the four-time defending medalist, the Soviet Union. And it was seen as, you know, good against evil, capitalism versus communism. It was good old plucky Yanks because they were amateur hockey players against these seasoned professionals. But the Americans won. And the very fact that ESPN pulled that out the drawer kind of showed me that there was precious little else which kind of can collectively bring America together sportingly, sport-wise, which kind of transcends, let's say, the Golden State Warriors being the best team in California.
Here's another thing, right? One of the things that is, I think, is interesting is that was a couple of things. One, the notion that the World Cup has brought Britain together as massively, right, I think is kind of distorted. It's a good media story, and people who care feel that because we've been engaged in seeing us not do well over the years. So I think that's a bit deceptive as a sort of big cultural moment, because there are a lot of people who just don't care either. But the one thing I think, another thing I think is interesting, though, is when you look at the US, say, with the Olympics, Americans have an expectation. Americans basically seem to do one of two things. Either they don't bother at all with the sport that the world does, right? So soccer, football, Americans don't really care about, right? So if Team USA does badly at that, people who care about soccer care, and the rest of the nation couldn't really give a toss. Or with something like the Olympics, generally the Americans expect to do incredibly well because they always do. It's the US and China who dominate the Olympics. So in that respect, they don't have what we have. The UK, specifically England, tend to have this feeling of if we do well, it's a bit of a surprise because we feel like we're the plucky underdogs. The US are either don't turn up or are the dominant force.
Listen, I think you've kind of put your finger on it there, that Americans fundamentally support winners in a way that we culturally like a plucky underdog and have cast ourselves in that role.
So why Americans can't stand soccer generally? They don't like football because it's low scoring.
But you speak to the average American sport fan, and when you talk about soccer, as they term it, they will talk about, actually, I'm just making a point for you, because actually they do talk about the women's American football team winning the 1999 Women's World Cup. And that was important, not only because they won and they beat China and she waved her top over her head and there's all those pictures in the newspaper, but also it did kind of herald the not quite the start of the MLS. I think the MLS had started just before, but the fact that, you know, football is, let's say, the fifth sport in America. So, you know, football has made some inroads in American kind of consciousness. But it seems to me, though, Doug, that fundamentally you guys like it, like your individuals when it comes to sport. And growing up, for me, it was kind of Chris Evert at Wimbledon was always like the blonde-haired, blue-eyed American taking on the world, or it was McEnroe and Jimmy Connors versus kind of everybody else. But that doesn't. But there is something about watching a team all in the same jerseys, so representing a country, playing another. Discuss.
Americans are very individualistic and jingoistic. And I think where you see our team sports succeed commercially, the basketball teams, the football teams, the baseball teams, there's much more identity with an individual than the team. And that's been what's changed in the last 30 or so years, and it's disappointing. I mean, I go and I watch, you know, I remember going to see the U.S. Open and watching, you know, the Williams sisters, and it's like, my God, those are such amazing athletes. Beautiful to watch the play and the way they interact with their opponents is a thing of beauty. You can get that when you watch a basketball game, but you don't get it when you just follow the scores. When you're following the scores, it's how many baskets did LeBron get? And that changes everything.
That's a very good point. Mick, LeBron James going to the LA Lakers. Good thing, bad thing?
I guess it's like two massive corporations trading oil futures. It's sort of a kind of an irrelevance, isn't it?
And on that seismic point, let's go on to our takeaways of the week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to The Things That Made England. I'm Roy Phil Brown, and with me I have...
David Crowther of The History of England.
It was the best of times. It was the worst.
She was the people's princess.
Little fight on the beaches.
Oh, wait, man. These are the things that made England.
Little fight on the landing ground.
These are the things that made England.
I have the body but of a weak and feeble woman.
These are the things that made England.
And a king of England, too.
These are the things that made England.
Cry God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England.
England! And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
It gives wind in Churchill's sails to say we can continue to fight on.
Well, there cannot be many more famous events in English history than 1066. It hurts, even now.
Because 1066 is important.
Yeah.
But there's aspects of modern British culture which I think get overlooked. So I'm proposing that this week we do Scar.
For me, the English flag has in the past certainly become associated with factionalism and, well, hideous racist and far-right views. And it's turned into a thing of disunity and almost xenophobia.
The idea of this show is to decide on what things that make England...
as she is, the country that, despite it all, we feel lucky to be part of.
Every week, one of us, that is David and I, will pitch an idea to the other to be designated as one of the things that makes England distinctive.
go and join our shiny new Facebook site, where once a month we will post a poll where, should you so desire, you can make your own very suggestions for applications to the I Made England Award. So, without more ado, let's do it.
It's the end of the show. It's a time when we all just like crack open either a lager or probably an IPA. Doug, you seem to me like an IPA type of man. I'm definitely a lager man, or maybe a little bit more cultured, and you've got a fine glass of red with you. But then again, you're drinking a big glass of red and it's what, 10 o'clock in the morning. Yes, Doug, you might have issues. But anyway, I'm wittering. But it's a time of the show where definitely we talk about our takeaways, things that have been on our mind or things that have caught our attention in the last 7 days. Being as the fact, Doug, we haven't had you on for about 3 months. Why don't you go first, sir?
There's been a lot of news besides the craziness on the world stage. And I think something which we need to keep focused on is some of the positive stuff, because we need to keep that going. Scientific and medical research keeps moving forward. We learn better ways to take care of people. We're able to come together and help the SEALs, the Navy SEALs in Thailand, rescue the soccer team that was trapped underground. That is an enormous victory for the goodness of people and what's possible and how we can use technologies that in some cases were developed for defense purposes, but use it for a really good, honorable humanitarian task. We need more of that. And we need to really recognize all of the elements that went into the technology and knowledge that was used to rescue those boys, because we need to do more of that research, not less.
Well said. Mr. Wright, over in Norwich, how about you, sir?
My takeaway is sort of semi-connected to what Doug just said. It was fantastic to see the football team get rescued and rescued so effectively, and to see both the families who live in that village and also just international efforts involved. I mean, that whole village were doing stuff like washing the clothes, making sure food was around, you know, that was a really good thing. But my actual takeaway is Elon Musk deciding he was going to create some kind of submarine to help get the kids out of there. And it was a great example, as so often happens, of the American technocracy having this notion of like coming up with a very elaborate way to solve a situation, when in fact what ended up being done was about experts doing some tricky but relatively sort of straightforward things to get those kids out of there. Meanwhile, Elon's there quickly making a submarine, and he ended up sort of at one point questioning the expertise of these people. And I think we've got to a point where there are these people within the world of technology, particularly the Elon Musk types, who kind of think that they can solve everything and always move towards the most high-tech solution for doing it. And it's an extreme example when he does it with a submarine, but look at what's happening with all the a lot of this app economy stuff is high tech or over-engineered solutions to problems we either didn't have or could solve more simply if we worked together as human beings.
I quite like that, and I think you're absolutely right. And you do get a real sense from the tech community that any problem that they encounter, there is no other precedent for it, and that they alone have the power to solve it. There's no need for anybody else to look at it, and that technology per se in and of itself is the answer to every problem. So I couldn't agree with you more. My takeaway, I'm going to somewhat butcher, and I butcher most things when I speak on this show, but it's going to go something like this. I saw my son graduate from high school, I think 2 weeks ago to the day. An incredibly proud moment. I'm in a hall with, I don't know how many students graduated, let's say there's about 250. So imagine there's like 500 parents there, and then the 250 kids. So it's a sweltering hot room. and the guy who took the ceremony started it something like this. And here is the butchering. We at the Halton School District give thanks and recognise that there were indigenous people on this land before the school was even erected. They are the Métis, the Iroquois, and I forget the name of the third tribe. We give thanks to those native and indigenous people that for this land of which we could build this school. Then he said about another three lines, of which one of them was, all people who are of European or other descent other than native Canadian are immigrants on this land and should never forget that. And then he started the ceremony. I looked at my son's mother and went, what the hell have I just heard there? And she went, dude, every school assembly, every official document from the school board starts thus. And she says, when you've heard it 10 times, it goes over your head. But I says, but when you hear it for the first time, it's pretty powerful. Now, does that mean that the rights and the rights of the First Peoples, the First Nations of Canada, are being completely and utterly respected? Absolutely not. But I did say Canada is a very different place from the United States. And it was, for me, a Brit just wandering in, it was an incredibly powerful way to start that whole graduating ceremony. But then just to wrap it up, and this will make you feel very happy, Mick, the last thing on the programme, some 2.5 hours later, when everyone was literally wilting because it was so hot in that room, was the school choir singing The Queen. And I thought, The Queen? And it was a British national anthem, because, of course, Canada is a monarchy. And they sang our national anthem, you know, God Save the Queen. And I just juxtaposed those two elements, that recognition that the land of which we were all sat on had been stolen from dispossessed people. And then, but we are in Canada, and they sang the British National Anthem right at the end. But of course, they couldn't call it thus. They called it The Queen. And it was a beautiful ceremony and just a very powerful start.
I love the first bit, but, you know, it's a shame they had to sing the worst national anthem in the whole world, officially the worst national anthem.
You know what, though? After watching the World Cup, the Uruguayan one, that... don't be disrespectful of Uruguay, a country which I should have visited about 10 years ago when my friend got married there. But like that, the tune of their national anthem sounds kind of like a joke. It is some joke Italian operetta from like the 19th century. So
still not as bad as God Save the Queen.
Ours is a dirge, and the words are kind of, you know, for another age. But the Marseillaise, you know, that's a jaunty tune. I do love a little bit of that. Doug, you can't vote for your own, but give us your favourite national anthem.
Oh, God, that's actually a difficult one. I would probably have to go with
French. Just say the Jamaican. No, you can't have the French one.
I don't know the Jamaican one.
You know what? I'm not going to sing on this podcast.
Oh, please do.
I've got a terrible voice. But I'll tell you what the Jamaican national anthem should be. It should be that Bob Marley one, Old Pirates, They Say Robbie Sillai from the Merchant Ships, Redemption Song. Redemption song should be the Jamaican national anthem. And if I was a politician of my worth in Jamaica, I'd petition for that. Because it's a lovely tune, and actually the intro is actually really beautiful.
Yeah, and Jerusalem should be ours.
Jerusalem's really stirring, but... you know, but when you, the words of it are just totally preposterous. I love the tune, and you can bellow out Jerusalem.
That's the point. You can bellow out, and it sounds like all national anthems are kind of ridiculous. Also, Blake's poem is there's some amazing stuff in that. You've got Dark Satanic Mills in there. Come on, you know.
No, maybe you're convincing.
Nor shall my sword sleep in my hand. Get in.
The other thing is about God Save the Queen is that up until the First World War, it was the national anthem of so many countries because it was the tune of which you just made up your national lyrics to.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's a crap remix.
Yeah. But it's still the national anthem of which two countries actually have. So it's the same tune that Liechtenstein actually has for theirs, because they didn't go through that revolutionary period or, you know, to be defeated in war, etc., etc. Anyway, on that minor historical note, let's wrap up proceedings. Doug, how can people find you on the social serum? What have you been up to?
On Twitter, I'm SS Doug, as in San Francisco Doug. On Facebook, Doug Levy News, DougLevyNews. And I am working on an article about the politics of division, which I'm excited about. I hope that'll be ready sometime in about a week.
Good. How about you, Mr. Wright?
I am Broken Bottle Boy on Twitter. I am working on getting more commissions and work for the agency I run. So if you like what I do on this podcast, what I do in my actual work is a lot less angry and much better, so you know.
And of course you can find me on Twitter where I'm simply at Royfield. And I'm still chugging away with my commission from the Commonwealth, so thank you, nice Commonwealth of ex-British subjugated nations, for giving me work and saying that you want me to produce podcasts for you, because that's most awesome of you. You can find us on the socials, on Twitter specifically, where we are at Mid-Atlantic Show. On Facebook, I still haven't quite got round to sorting out the group, though I've added all the pundits to it. So maybe go onto Facebook in about a week's time and type in Mid-Atlantic Show and then join the group. Don't forget, folks, that we are fundamentally representing the view of the world, which is inclusive, cuddly, but we do call out people on their shit when they do stupid, hateful, horrible things. See you all again in approximately 2 weeks' time for another Mid-Atlantic Show. Thank you. Toodaloo. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And ships minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.